You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is November 23rd, 2021. Well, inflation, we always believed, at least back since I was a child, that your best hedges against inflation. And when we say inflation, we're talking about consumer price increases. We're talking about producer price increases. We're not so much talking about the money supply right now, but your best hedges were gold and silver. Well, the person you are about to hear from, our good friend, Jamie Keach, founder, chief investment officer of resource-insider.com, thinks things might have changed a little bit. Well, let's see what he has to say. And if you got a question, comment for Jamie, shoot me an email, kl@carrielutz.com. Jamie, welcome back to the show. So we're talking pre-call and you're thinking maybe gold and silver aren't the best inflation hedges out there.
Well, I mean, we look at what happened in 2021 over the course of the last year. Gold and silver, I believe, have been one of the worst performing commodities out there, right? Not just in the mining and metal space or the energy space, but across the spectrum of commodities, everything from coffee to soybeans. Do I think that gold and silver have an important part to play in the inflation story? I would say absolutely. You know, gold and silver producers and explorers make up a significant part of my personal investment portfolio. But what we are seeing react really, really well is what we would call the energy metals or sort of the future energy assets is what I think of them. And these are things like uranium. These are things like lithium, things like copper. We've seen these things spike substantially over the last year. Even over the last few months, you know, many of them are hitting or pushing up against all-time highs, particularly copper and lithium. So there's a ton of capital that is flooding into these sectors, and they've performed really, really well, both in the current political environment and I think as a result of inflation.
All right. So you wonder what's going on here, why the ultimate store of value 5,000 years lived through, prospered through deflations, inflations. Now we've got really major inflation that's anything but transitory, and yet gold, silver just can't catch a bid.
Well, what is it? I was just reading it the other day, and you know the number seems to change every week, but I think it's something like 40% of all US dollars ever printed have been done in the last something like 12 to 24 months. Have you read that stat?
Yes, I saw that. I did see it.
So you have that on the one hand. On the other hand, there's something, if you look at all the governments and funds and sovereign wealth funds and capital allocators of the world, it's something like $39 trillion are committed to being pulled out of the oil and gas sector. That these are, you know, these are professional institutions and investors, or professional investors and institutions rather, that for their whole career have allocated money into oil and gas, and that money is now being recommitted. It's being pulled out. They're saying, we no longer believe in oil and gas. It doesn't align with our values. So that money is not just going to go sit in someone's checking account somewhere. That money has to be deployed somewhere. So we have enough money that is, you know, two order of magnitudes the size of the mining industry that now has been consistently committed to energy throughout history that now has to go somewhere else. And we're finding, I believe, that capital starting to trickle its way into things like copper, into lithium, sort of what people consider now the future of energy. And this is really, really good for us here in the mining sector, for the commodity sector, because if just a fraction of that makes it into metals, you know, we're going to see prices skyrocket.
Well, I can't believe that all that money is being pulled out of energy. Let them go through a winter like Texas went through last winter, largely due to so-called renewables. And the concept of renewables is kind of a farce, because when you look at what they consider renewables, you got wind, you got solar, And then you have hydroelectric power. That is the leading renewable in use in the world, far eclipsing anything in solar and wind. And we see there are limitations, especially in the land up north there, our neighbor to the north, of where solar and maybe it's windy up there, but you don't get a lot of sun in the winter, that's for sure. Even in your neck of the woods out in Vancouver, you still got rain and it's gray for 6 months of the year. So let them see what happens when gas goes to $12 a gallon here in the U.S. I mean, right now there's places you find it. It's going for $5 and premium unleaded in Florida here where I am. Over $4 a gallon. Now, I just so happen to have bought a Tesla recently, and not for that reason. I don't really believe I'm saving the planet by any stretch, but it's a cool car. That's my reason for getting it. But I'm now exempt from higher gasoline prices, but we're going to have higher electric prices as a result of this as well.
Yes. Yeah. And look, it's something like 60 to 65% of the world's base load power still comes from coal. You know, renewables as we know them make up a really, really small percentage. You're right, hydroelectric power is the biggest one. British Columbia, where I live, Vancouver, this province is almost totally powered on hydroelectric power, as are several other provinces in Canada, Ontario, Quebec. We've got a lot of rivers here. We've got a lot of mountains. But, you know, I think if people are serious, and it sounds to me like they are, about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, you know, the solution is unlikely to be solar power because, you know, as you pointed out, there's a lot of places in the world that doesn't work. And to me, the only sort of short to medium term solution to that is going to be nuclear energy. And it's the only prolific and effective form of baseload power that isn't greenhouse gas emission generating. And I think we're going to see a ton of money flow into that space as the reality of what it takes to solve this problem that the world's been, you know, the biggest investors in the world are being committed to. I think they're going to come to the conclusion that that's really the only viable solution, at least, you know, in the coming decade.
Yeah. And looks like uranium, which was the dog of the commodity world for at least the past 10 years, I guess it's about 10 years, yeah, since 11, has really come back roaring to life, in part due to Eric Sprott's commitment to the ETF. But there's certainly other factors. We kind of just been waiting for the spark that was going to bring uranium back to life.
Yeah, and I mean, we anticipated this back in 2018. We built a uranium portfolio, a basket of, I want to say, about 25 to 30 names that we put, you know, several million dollars into. And, you know, as of today, we're up over 300% on that. And so it's gone really, really well. You know, the writing was on the wall in the uranium sector that if prices continued as they were back in 2018, 2019, 2020, that there was going to be no nuclear energy going forward because there wasn't going to be a drop of uranium left on the planet that was viable to mine. So we loaded up on those and we're reaping the benefits right now. And frankly, you know, I kind of think we're really just getting started here in the uranium sector. I think we really have a good year in front of us in this space. And we're pretty excited to see what happens with that portfolio.
You're thinking $100 a pound uranium, is that out of the realm?
I don't really like to make price predictions, but I do think we're really just getting started here.
All right. Well, that's, you know, it was a neglected sector, underinvested, just kind of like copper, underinvested, no expansion. You had mines closing right and left the planet because nobody could make any money at $20, $25, $30 uranium. All of a sudden, the ball game has changed, but you can't just pump money in and expect immediate results. This is a cycle that from investment to production that goes on for a number of years, isn't it?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable, high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, and I mean, uranium is one of the most regulated industries on the planet. You know, it's hard to get a copper mine permitted almost anywhere these days and build. It's even harder to get a uranium mine permitted and built due to all the sort of nuclear implications there. So this is not something that supply can be turned on overnight. And, you know, I think the price is going to reflect that.
Yeah, well, I think what you're going to see is all of a sudden, because they're inducing these shortages in petroleum and natural gas by restricting pipelines, by doing all sorts of stupid things, in my opinion, the prices will go so high that production will have to increase because they're just not going, it's not going to be palatable for large swaths. I mean, look what's happening in Europe, Jamie. We could be seeing a pretty substantial die-off if they have a very cold winter, which, who knows the weather, you know. They're as good at predicting the weather as I am about going to the casino, just as effective too, I might add. But it's conceivable we could see a lot of people die in Europe this winter if the gas spigot gets turned off.
I don't want to speculate on that. I think that they're going to come up with solutions there. I think the gas spigot does not get turned off. I think it's just a matter of the price that will need to be paid. And I think it's going to be substantially higher than it is today, which is already substantially higher than what it was a year ago.
Hey, we're talking $30 US per million BTUs. It's come down a bit since then, but there's an acute shortage. It could go to 50, and then it's not so much that the supply isn't there, is that people really got to decide whether they want dog food or whether they want to heat their house. They'll eat dog food to heat their house, if you will. Maybe we won't have this die-off, but we're going to have a dire situation.
Yeah, it's going to be financially crippling for a lot of people.
And the irony, it's just like famines and food. The world produces 25% more food than it could possibly consume. Under most pessimistic standards, we're going to see this with oil that we could produce probably three times more than we actually consume. But because of misguided policies, you know, we're left chasing the uranium cycle.
Yeah. Although, I mean, there are so many funds and pension plans and capital allocators that have now been massively, massively restricted on even their ability to invest in oil or gas by their board of directors or chairman or trustees or whomever is sort of overseeing that investment committee. So, you know, I do think for those smaller, more nimble investors that are able to build positions in oil and gas, they're going to see really, really exceptional returns over the coming years.
It's going to have to be, because if there's a shortage of capital, as we know, supply and demand, you have a shortage of capital, then you got to pay more to get that capital. You got to give better returns on that capital. Historically, with a few minor blips, oil companies actually have very low, almost substandard returns on invested capital. When you look at the majors, you know, it's really, they haven't been a great investment choice for a long time. That's why they need to keep paying these dividends, right?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So again, we talked about this last time, if you remember, when we were talking about copper. Everybody wants this green world, this green economy, but they haven't figured out how to build a copper mine in less than 12 to 20 years, and they don't seem to have any desire to either. And we're facing the same situation in uranium and other crucial metals and minerals. And that means big profit potential for people who can see that trend earlier on. It's just beginning now, I think. But if you can see that trend.
This is great for resource investors. There has never been, in my opinion, a setup in the commodity space that is so blatant as today. You know, resources are trading at dismal, dismal historical lows compared to the valuations we're seeing on the stock market and the S&P 500. There has never been a more asymmetric trade in resources ever. So for people who are paying attention, for people who are, I would say, sort of strategically and methodically allocating capital into this sector, I believe, and I'm doing this myself, we're going to see really, really big, potentially life-changing wins for people in this space over the coming 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. And that's why you need to subscribe to Resource Insider. Just tell us what people can expect, what you can expect when you go to the site and you subscribe.
Yeah, it's just resourceinsider.com. You can sign up, put your email address in for free. If you sign up now, you can email me and you can ask me, and I will give you a breakdown of every trade we've ever made at Resource Insider. The good, the bad, the ugly. You'll see our returns across 3 years of doing this, which are quite good, I should add. And you'll see what we own, why we own it, and what we've sold and how we're sort of allocating capital. So I'd say sign up now. And then in addition to that, you're going to get regular updates on what we've been buying, what we're focused on, and where we see the market going. And, you know, my team and I, all we do all day is look for investment opportunities in the natural resource sector. I've got myself, other engineers and team working with me to go and find these things. And that's what we do all the time. So if you're interested in learning about that, sign up for free, and we'll provide you all the information we can.
And I'm a subscriber and love the publication. Highly, highly recommended. So if you got a question for Jamie, shoot me an email to kl@carrylutz.com. Jamie, one other thing. There's a book, I'm sure you're very well familiar with it, by Charles McKay, called Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
All right. We're living through one of these now. The thought that somehow the green economy, and I'll just assume for the purposes of the show, I think it is the greatest thing ever. I support it 1,000%. I am just enamored. I can't wait for everything and everyone to go green. All right, putting that aside, the fact is, we just talked about cycles of producing copper, cycles producing silver, all these vital materials required for the green, this glorious green economy. And yet the same people who are pushing it are holding back the production of vital materials to help bring it about, which is, you know, it's a delusion, Jamie. It's really a delusion.
Yeah. I think about this a lot in Resource Insider. You know, we try to approach these issues as investors first and look at this with sort of clear-eyed pragmatism. And what I would say to anyone listening is it really doesn't matter whether you believe in climate change, whether you're pro or against these green policies. What matters is that sort of the most powerful institutions, the wealthiest investors on the planet, really do believe in this. And they are allocating trillions and trillions of dollars of capital to fight this and to solve these problems. And so your job and my job as an investor is to go look at, you know, how we can take advantage of these situations in the world. And that's how we're positioning ourselves at Resource Insider. What are the areas that are going to benefit from this massive influx of capital? And I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, copper, lithium, uranium. There's a few other things that we're really investing quite heavily in right now at Resource Insider. We're about to launch two new deals, which I think are really, really unique ways to position ourselves into this. And what I would say to anyone at home is, you know, try to see these problems as clear-eyed as you can and put your money to where you think other money is going. You know, one of the best ways to make big returns is to get into a space or a company before the big, big capital allocators, the big hedge funds and banks start pouring money at it. That's when we often see these big, big price inflections. So that's a big part of our strategy. I think there's going to be a lot of people who make a lot of money over the next couple of years if they make the right decisions now. On the other hand, I think there's going to be a lot of people who are hurt a lot. I think we are in for a serious energy crisis, and I think it's going to slam the sort of financial health of everyday citizens across North America, across Europe, across the world.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I am politically agnostic when it comes to investing, although certain companies I won't invest in for personal reasons, like tobacco companies just won't do it. But for the most part, politically agnostic, like you said, whether you believe in it or not is irrelevant, because the people who are putting the money in, the people who are making the policies, they are firm believers. And that's really the only thing that matters here. But like you said, if you can see the trend and get in there early in the right companies, you can really prosper from perhaps the short-sightedness or the idealism of people who, for the most part, have never had to make a payroll and never really had to get their hands dirty actually working a physical job, myself included. And that isn't true. I actually was in the printing business. My hands got plenty dirty. But you know what I'm saying? I've never been out there with a shovel digging, looking for this stuff. Hey, just go to resourceinsider.com. And if you got a question for Jamie, again, shoot me an email, kl@carrylutz.com. Jamie, we'll be talking to you again shortly. Be well.
Thanks for having me, Carrie. Very much appreciated.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.